Episode 67, Touchdown Jesus. This is the second week of September, and in this week's show, we talk about protesting walls with Jesus.
Exploring the intersection of politics, science, culture, and history from a secular perspective. It's Secular Yakking with Robert and Tom, the dynamic duo of obscure secular media.
Hey, welcome back, Yakkers. Hope you've had a wonderful 2 weeks, because I know I did. And, as I noted last time, Amy is no longer with us. She's off to do some other projects, but we do have some replacements for her. Let's introduce our replacements. First off, let's go with Tom Essel. Go ahead, Tom.
Hello, everybody. You all probably know me from the Yak from the Past history segment, and now I'm here to be a poor replacement for Amy.
And we also have, returning, is Carrie.
Hi, everyone.
So, at most of you know that Carrie's my daughter, and she's wanting to break into the podcast industry, so I figured I'd give her a break.
Yeah, it's quite fun, so it's all good.
This is your big break. Don't blow it.
Try not to. No promises.
All right.
So, let's get into some show stuff then.
All right.
I'm going to start with Twitter followers. Twitterers, as the case may be.
Good luck.
Yeah. So, we have Almighty God, Javier Kano, Peace Revolution, that's a revolution with a three, interesting. Dr. Kim, the Napkin Pope, which I think that's the second Napkin Pope. We may have competing popery there.
Oh, schism.
Yeah. Transgender with a Z, Ash Cipher, Stop Homophobia, Shana Tunu Badkamkar, close, yes, maybe,
sure. I don't
know. Shantanu Badkamkar.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe Bahad Kemkar.
Bahad. Probably. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I bet it
that
is.
That sounds right.
Yeah, we butchered that. Sorry. Dominia Victoria Rage, Hickory Humanist, G-Mo, Reason Revolution, and Jeff Mack. And those are our Twitter followers. And you can follow us, too. Anybody know the Twitter?
No. It's at Secular Yakking,
yes,
isn't it?
It is at Secular Yakking. Yay. I didn't have to say it this time. Yay.
You didn't. Yay, I know things.
Yay.
All right. As I discussed a little bit in the intro, we did some changes. We did a little bit of lineup changing, obviously some host changing. There's going to be a few more changes coming in the near future, and we'll make those announcements.
Yeah, Yak from the Past will only be every other week now, I think.
Yeah, we're going to alternate the Potter Award and Yak from the Past.
Yes,
I think.
And we're working on some pretty cool interviews.
Yes, we are. So that's something new that's coming up is guests and interviews, something we never really got to do before.
Awesome.
So that'll be fun.
Yes.
All right. I guess we'll get into our news story.
Sounds good.
All right.
All right. So unless you've been hiding under a rock the past couple of weeks, you know all about the national anthem, correct?
Yes. I am rockless, so I know about it.
Okay. Well, San Francisco's 49er quarterback Colin Kaepernick started a kerfuffle when he chose to sit out the anthem in a preseason game. He was protesting the recent violence against Black Americans, saying, "I am not going to stand up to show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses Black people and people of color."
Valid.
Valid. Very valid point.
Yep.
That's all you got?
Yeah, I mean,
that's all I got.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Don't wait for us.
All right.
You're driving this train.
All right, fine. And the crowd went wild. Literally. He was immediately called racial slurs of all sorts, told to leave the country, and an old rumor about him being a Muslim came back up. So this...
Yeah, I didn't know there was a rumor about the Muslim. I don't really follow football, but...
Well, I don't either, but...
It's kind of interesting. Anytime somebody does anything deemed unpatriotic, they're suddenly a Muslim, especially if they have non-white skin.
Well, yeah, I think that, especially with him, because he's not even that dark of a black guy. He's kind of light skin, which makes him look a little bit Arabic. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is weird because like Kaepernick is like a Russian Slavic sounding last name.
If I remember right, he's adopted, but that's just.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
No.
Which makes sense.
There you go.
But here's the interesting part. And with the Muslim thing, it makes perfect sense because we live in a culture where piety and patriotism are intrinsically tied together.
This is very true.
Which mm-hmm.
Very, very true.
Which is why I'm talking about this on Secular Yakking. So, because there was a ton of that in there. just berating him for not standing for the anthem, calling him names I really can't say on here.
Yeah. Oh, that, and then, you know, the whole leave America, if he doesn't like it, go somewhere else nonsense. We get that a lot over Original Model Project.
We get it so much that I have a typed up script for that. That I just I just copy and paste it every single time. I have four or five.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I knew you had the one that you posted when we first come across them. I didn't know you had others. I should do that. It would save me a lot of time.
I just got so tired of trying to remember what I wrote last time that was so good that I finally wrote a really good one. I have it saved on a Google Drive, and when someone says something stupid, I go get one of my canned responses and throw it in there. Makes sense.
Pretty good idea.
That is a good idea. I like that.
Yeah. I, in fact, did a post on one of the groups saying, what's your best responses to these questions or these these comments? But that's off topic here.
It is off topic. All right. So he's a terrible American and a Muslim.
Apparently. Although Snopes has said that he's not a Muslim. But, you know.
Well, that's a liberal conspiracy. So.
Yes, it is. Can't trust that at all.
Not at all.
But he was just a match on the powder keg. Wow, that's a good one.
I like it the other way.
Cowder peg?
I like cowder peg. I like that one.
I'm going to put that in somewhere. he was just a match on the powder keg of protest using the national anthem and our pledge of allegiance. A ton of athletes have joined him with protests of their own. So a real footballer for the Seattle Reign, Megan Rapinoe, took a knee during the national anthem. And three members of the West Virginia Tech women's volleyball team kneeled during the national anthem as well, which is rather interesting. A college team.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Broncos linebacker Brandon Marshall protested the national anthem, and a sponsor of his, Air America Federal Credit Union, pulled their sponsorship.
Air Academy Federal
Credit Union. Air Academy. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Air America. They're no longer on air.
They're not.
Wow.
Yeah, it was interesting. Actually, I was at Applebee's drinking, because that's what I do. And at Applebee's, because my life is sad. And
you just don't want to be alone at Applebee's.
It's just, I don't. And I actually watched the Brandon Marshall protest the national anthem while I was there, because they had the football game on. And it was interesting because the camera was just locked on him and wasn't really on the person singing the national anthem, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. Which brings up a question. Is this type of protest effective? Is it too much? Is it the wrong time? Is it a good thing to protest the anthem?
I think their hearts are in the right place, but my personal opinion is that it's not particularly effective, because then the conversation becomes, you know, Colin Kaepernick sits out national anthem, and then people don't really talk about the issue he was protesting, which is, you know, police violence against people of color.
Right.
And so I when celebrities do things like this, I think it has the opposite effect, because even I've noticed even the people who support what Kaepernick is saying, their conversation is usually about, you know, centers around his First Amendment right to sit it out.
Right. Yeah. I'm fairly guilty of that myself.
Yeah. It's easy to get kind of sucked into that, which is unfortunate. I'm not going to say I'm perfect and haven't, you know, been sucked into the wrong direction either, but it's easy to do.
Well, one of the things I try to do, because, you know, I do a lot of commenting on social media because I have no real life, is I try to do both conversations. I try to point out, you know, he has the right to do this, and, you know, we shouldn't necessarily be basically beating on him for doing his First Amendment rights. And then the question becomes, are you more upset about him protesting the anthem or what his cause is? So I try to at least bring it back to the original cause.
Right.
Which doesn't always work out so well. But it at least works back into the conversation, the Black Lives Movement, which he is trying to bring attention to.
Right. Mm-hmm. There was kind of a similar deal, not quite as well known, but the incident up in Mizzou between Melissa Click and Mark Schierbecker, the photojournalist, where she shoved him. And the whole conversation became about Mark Schierbecker being pushed and shoved by this teacher rather than what, you know, everybody was there actually protesting.
Right.
So it's kind of a, it's a tough one to navigate.
It is.
A lot of conflicting passions.
Right. Yeah, I certainly agree with that. And this is one of those issues that really strikes a nerve with a lot of people. I mean, there are a lot of people who talk about we shouldn't disrespect the flag because of the veterans and the soldiers who died in wars. But that's kind of exactly why we should be able to protest the anthem.
Exactly.
In my opinion.
Yeah. I agree. I'm just going to agree. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. That makes that easy.
I was going to say something, but the cat distracted me. So now it's a proper show, and Rafiki has interrupted me.
All right. Yeah. Well, yeah, not only athletes and celebrities get to do this. Anyone can do this, right?
Yeah.
The AHA has a Sit Out the Pledge campaign, which we've talked about on this show. That's where they're asking people to not say the pledge. While the pledge and the anthem are technically different, because of the concept of piety and patriotism, I think they're still tied together.
Oh, yeah.
As part of the same kind of speech.
Yeah. But there's also the kind of issue of, because from my understanding, the AHA campaign is geared toward like schools.
Right.
Which, of course, would be a government entity, whereas someone like Colin Kaepernick is actually at work.
Right.
Not a government entity.
Right. Well, if my understanding is that the NFL doesn't have a requirement that they stand for the pledge. So he's not breaking a work rule.
Well, that's good. That's probably a good way to avoid a lawsuit, too.
Yeah, I think so. You know, we may have foreign players playing, so do we want to require them to play, to stand for the pledge of not their country?
Yeah.
It's an interesting concept.
Do we have foreign players?
I don't know. We'd touched on that once, and maybe visas, maybe someone who knows football can tell us if we have actual foreign citizens playing in the NFL. I don't know.
Surely we do.
I would imagine so.
Probably.
Yeah.
But my favorite story that came out in the past couple weeks that came from this was from a Texas student named Melody Banks, who was punished on August 29th for praying when a teacher interrupted her and voiced his disapproval, telling her she could not pray in his class.
Wow.
Yeah, she was sitting there silently praying, and this teacher says, yeah, she was silently praying. She wasn't even, like, you know, doing the Lord's Prayer or anything. She was just at her desk praying.
Hmm.
And then on August 31st and September 1st, another teacher refused to allow her to remain in class after she declined to stand for the pledge.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, wow, okay. So they're about to win a bunch of money.
Yeah. Well, here's my favorite part of this, and here's why I like it so much, is that the right wing, which is about you have to stand for the pledge, right? Their heads are about to explode because now they have to defend both positions. Either she gets her freedom of speech or she doesn't, because that's the thing. Either she gets to pray. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, why does it matter? It's not bothering anyone else but the teacher who's, like, fighting.
Right.
She could be, like, praying, be like, I hope I pass this test. Like,
exactly.
Like, I always am just like, God, I need to pass this test. Help me. But yeah, it doesn't matter. It's not affecting anyone but the people who are, like, going against it or something.
Well, what's also interesting is what Melody herself said. And she said, I was like, I don't feel like I should pray to the flag because it can't take me to heaven. And this is a really good instance on why mandatory pledges and mandatory standing for the anthem is wrong.
Yes.
It's not just because you don't like it. It's because sometimes it goes against your religious belief.
Yeah, and I would say this is also a great example of a secular religious person, which is something we don't talk about very often, or at least pay lip service to very often.
True.
Is that religious people can have secular values like separation of church and state as well, which is obviously what Melody is talking about here.
Yeah, so
I mean, she's not wrong. It's not. She's the flag isn't going to do anything. No. It's an object that doesn't even speak or move, other than
unless you blow on it.
Yeah, yeah. Other than like
move. Or if you're on the moon set and then it moves automatically.
Oh, right.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah.
Bravo.
Yeah, I do that occasionally. Come up with a good one.
Mm-hmm. You get one. one per month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, y'all, this is Tucker from the Atheist in the Trailer Park podcast. And I might live in a beer can, but I ain't no inbred redneck. If you listen to my podcast, I'm going to learn you something. And no, I ain't talking about how to marry your cousin and not have kids with 16 fingers and stuff like that. I mean, I actually talk about real stuff and teach people where the Bible stole its stories from. So y'all give me a listen, would you? Thank you.
All right. I believe on that note,
yeah,
it's history time.
It's...
Great Scott! Marty! We have to go, yuck, to the past!
You know, I've heard that like 30 times now, and it makes me laugh every time I hear it.
Yeah.
It's my first time hearing it, and it's really good.
It is.
Yeah, that guy, he did a good job.
He did.
So, so buckle in, people.
Strapped in.
So, this... Yeah, strap in. So, this week... For Yak from the Past, we're going to talk about Jesus and the historicity of Jesus.
Well, that sounds very, very, very interesting.
Yeah, yep. Everyone's going to be mad at me after this, I'm sure. But that's what I do.
Okay.
So, and this came up in a conversation with a friend of mine who was talking about, you know, the historical Jesus. And so, you know, whether or not Jesus existed as a real person. So, the first thing we got to cover here is what is meant by historicity. So historicity is the word historians use to describe the authenticity of something, either a primary or secondary source, an event itself, a person's role in an event, or the actual existence of something in history. You have to excuse my voice. I just ate dinner and I have a heartburn.
It's okay. So, it happens.
All right. Carrie forgives me, so I'm fine now.
Okay.
So historicity is a complex topic, and there isn't necessarily a black and white answer that comes from examining the historicity of a subject. So when it comes to certain subjects, like religious or cultural myths, some aspects of a story, like the Iliad, for example, can be based in reality. We know that Troy... the cat's interrupting me again. We know that Troy... We know that Troy existed... and that several large-scale conflicts were fought there. And, of course, the parts of the Iliad involving the gods and demigods, like Achilles, those are themselves ahistorical. So when you look at the historicity of something, you might find that it's both historical and ahistorical.
So, like, a good piece of historical fiction.
Like, a good, like, sort of, yeah, like, historical fiction, which, interestingly, is kind of how... You know, I'm not going to get too far down into that rabbit hole, but that's kind of how that's kind of what the Old Testament is. A lot of it is almost like this kind of historical fiction. There are some parts of it that are actually based in real events,
really,
which I'm actually going to be talking about here in about six sentences.
Okay.
So now we need to talk about how we establish historicity. So you establish historicity using corroborating evidence. So this can be either historical sources or archaeological sources. So basically evidence that agrees with one another. The discovery of the cylinder of Cyrus, for example, established the historicity of the Babylonian exile of the Jews and corroborated the story of the exile from the Old Testament. And for those not familiar, the story, this, the basic story is the Babylonians conquer Judea and they send the Jews into exile in Babylon. Cyrus the Great, king of the Persians, comes along, conquers Babylon, and releases the Jews from their exile and sends them back from whence they came.
So there is truth in the Old Testament.
There is, surprisingly.
Okay. Yes.
And the Cylinder of Cyrus is actually the Persian account of this event happening.
So we do have something outside the Old Testament that corroborates something in the Old Testament.
That corroborates something in the yeah. And okay. now, of course, in the Old Testament version, it's seen through the lens of religion because it's a religious text.
Well, obviously.
But it's kind of based in reality. And before then, the Babylonian exile was thought to be just another cultural myth, like the Exodus from Egypt, which there's really no corroborating evidence for. So another point needs to be made here, which is that the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is just because there is no corroborating evidence for something, that doesn't mean it didn't happen or it didn't exist. absence of evidence is simply evidence for the absence of evidence.
No, I've got a meme that says differently.
Well, you take your meme and shove it.
All right.
I don't have anything to say to that. Usually I have something clever, but not that one. That was good. Okay, there you got two in one show.
I'm good.
It's good.
It's 2 weeks bring off, your, so, you know, your, they've yeah, been building
that's
up.
That's right. That's what it is. So I bring this up because recently the topic of the historicity of Jesus came up between a friend and I, Dan, and he believes that Jesus never existed as a historical figure, which is a view he shares with Dr. Richard Carrier, whose book On the Historicity of Jesus discusses the improbability of Jesus existing. I'm going to be discussing Carrier in a different segment because there's a lot to unpack with him. And I get kind of fired up when I talk about them. So,
yeah, I could see why.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. So today I'm just going to tackle historicity itself. So What do people mean when they say the historicity of Jesus? What they mean is, did such a person as Jesus ever exist? Is there a historical basis for the character of Jesus in the Gospels? Like there's a historical basis for the Babylonian exile. So, and the answer to this question, and people aren't really going to like this, but the answer to the question is that the question is unanswerable. Anyone claiming to have definitive proof one way or the other, yes or no, on this subject should really raise your suspicions. And there are several reasons for this. Number one is there's no contemporary evidence for the existence of Jesus of Nazareth. All the evidence comes from decades after his supposed death. Something like the Gospel of Mark is not evidence for the existence of Jesus so much as it's evidence for what people believed about Jesus at the time.
Yeah, that's my understanding of it as well.
Right. Two, people did not have birth records, hospital records, death records, photographs, newspaper articles, or anything like that.
Stone carvings?
to establish that they actually existed. There's no records department.
Okay.
You know,
right.
Most people in the ancient world were completely illiterate. So something like Pliny the Younger's letter to Tacitus about his uncle, which helps establish the historicity of Pliny the Elder, which you may remember from when I talked about Pompeii, that didn't exist for most people. So if Jesus was who the Gospels claim, an illiterate peasant from Galilee, you would actually expect there to be no contemporaneous evidence that he actually existed, because he wasn't important enough to be documented.
There are some people that would beg to differ on that one.
Yeah, well, they're wrong. So, if you deny the existence of Jesus based solely on the fact that no contemporary evidence demonstrates his existence, you must also believe that most individuals in the ancient world never existed either.
Well, I'm willing to bet that you could get Richard Carrier to prove that no one in the ancient world existed.
I bet you could, too, if the right people paid him. But we'll get into that later.
That we will.
So, to answer the question, did Jesus exist? That's usually based on how whatever evidence you have is interpreted. So the yes side to the argument is based on how reasonable it is to believe that a poor peasant in first century Palestine claimed to be the Messiah and then was executed for sedition. So we know that sort of thing did happen, and it happened quite often in first century Palestine. So it wouldn't even have been an extraordinary event that someone had done this, especially if they failed.
Correct.
But none of that actually establishes the actual existence of the individual in the story itself. It only establishes that it's reasonable to believe that it occurred. However, saying that it was Jesus ignores the possibility that the Jesus story is actually an appropriation of other people's stories, like that of Judas the Galilean, who essentially claimed the same thing that Jesus did. And we have actual documents of that. So the Gospels could actually be about somebody else with a different name, or about nobody in particular. So the no side to this argument, no, Jesus did not exist, is usually based on the similarities of the Jesus story to other resurrection savior stories, like the Egyptian god, I think Isis is one of them. I think Gilgamesh gets resurrected, you know, at some point. Or no, it's Horus, not Isis. It's Horus. So they conclude that the character Jesus is an amalgamation of Middle Eastern, Jewish, and Greek myths and legends, which there's some truth to that. So therefore, the individual never existed. And of course, this ignores the possibility that everything ever written about Jesus could be a total fabrication and the individual it's based on still existed. So you brought up historical fiction. The example I have is Old West dime novels. You know, about Billy the Kid, Jesse James, Wild Bill Hickok.
Yeah.
Buffalo Bill. Those kind of Old West dime novels. Nothing in them is even remotely true about the individuals themselves. Yet those people actually existed and inspired the writing of the novels. So the point I'm trying to make is that there isn't enough evidence, or really any evidence, to establish the existence or non-existence of Jesus in any real constructive manner. The question, did Jesus of Nazareth exist, is simply unanswerable. It isn't a valid historical question to ask because the historicity cannot be established. So quit arguing about it. And that is my spiel.
Cool.
Indeed.
And I'll just add to that, that I am of the mind that it doesn't matter whether he existed or not. What matters is the claims of the miracles in the Bible that make the difference. That Christianity relies upon the resurrection, relies upon certain magical events happening.
Right.
And the likelihood of those happening is pretty low. So,
well, it's also important that to remember that the existence of Christianity is in some ways actually a separate issue from the actual existence of Jesus.
Right.
Because Jesus was a Jew. Christianity wasn't a thing.
That is true.
So, you know, Jesus was born, raised, and died a Jew, if, you know, of course, if he did exist. I'm of the personal opinion that it's reasonable to believe that that this was a cult based around an actual person.
Yeah.
But I also recognize that there's no way to actually prove that.
Yeah. So
the issue here is proof.
Right.
Which is what I'll be talking about with Richard Carrier in 2 weeks.
Oh, okay. That'll be fun.
Oh yeah. People will really love me after that.
All right. I expect some, voicemails and calls after that, or emails after that one. That'll be good.
Yes. Yeah. Send me an email. You can always email me or yell at me on Twitter.
Cool.
We'll have all that info at the end of the show.
Yeah.
The Atheist Nomads are hosting a 12-hour streamathon from 1 p.m. to 1 a.m. Mountain on Saturday, September 24, 2016, to raise money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's Light the Night Walk. Dustin is walking for his mom, who survived Hodgkin's lymphoma nearly 35 years ago, and Lauren is walking for her uncle, who was lost to leukemia, and aunt to lymphoma. Both are walking as part of the Treasure Valley Coalition of Reason team. The funds raised will be going to help patients pay for the ridiculously expensive treatments. Go to atheistnomads.com/live for more details and links to where you can donate. And yes, there will be a drinking game.
Well, with that, I think we'll move on to our next little segment.
Yes.
Yes.
So we have This Week in Secular Activism, and I do believe that it is Carrie's turn to take the mic.
Indeed it is. Okay. All right. So This Week in Secular Activism, the Saline County Atheist Society will be offering a wall of separation to go alongside a suggested Ten Commandments monument in Little Rock, Arkansas. For the Arkansas Capital Arts and Grounds Commission, we'll have a meeting on September 13th to consider applications for displaying on Capitol grounds. One display is from the American History and Heritage Foundation, which is seeking to place the Ten Commandments, and another is from the Satanic Temple, which is seeking to place a statue of Baphomet.
Baphomet, that is correct.
Baphomet.
Yay, I did it.
Yeah, we know Ave Satanas.
Ave Satanas. Ave Domini Inferni.
Also, Leewood Thomas said in press release, in looking for a way to participate on the lawn, a physical decorative brick wall placed between the religious monuments and our Capitol building seemed fitting.
Oh, very much so.
Indeed.
Yeah, this is a really cool story. I love this idea. I am actually surprised nobody else has tried this before.
Yeah,
it's an amazing idea.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I mean, it's one of those it's one of those things where it's so brilliant that it's obvious.
Right.
Like, we should have known this earlier.
What really gets me about it is, of course, you know, the Satanic Temple, their Baphomet statue, everywhere there's a Ten Commandments. They not everywhere, but you know, they try to place the Ten Commandments next to, or the Baphomet next to the Ten Commandments.
Mm-hmm.
And there's kind of a competing religious iconography battle going on there. So if we can put the Ten Commandments up, which are, you know, Judeo-Christian religious iconography, then you need to allow other religious iconography.
Right.
Now, one of the kind of common arguments, and I think it was a representative from the state of Arkansas made the argument that the Ten Commandments aren't a religious display, but rather it's a historical display representing law-giving.
Hmm. Well, that's a very interesting take, which I could kind of see that angle, but it's only...
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing here, because the Baphomet statue only... Because there's kind of sort of a quasi-historical argument you can make with the Baphomet statue, but it doesn't really answer the iconography issue with, you know, specifically law-giving. And but the wall of separation that the Saline County atheists are proposing, it does offer a counterpoint to that, because, of course, the separation of church and state, which comes from Thomas Jefferson's letter to the Danbury Baptists, has really worked its way into our legal system. I've actually covered this on the show before.
Right.
It's something that worked its way into the legal system in about the mid 19th century. But it's an important part of our legal system. So if the Ten Commandments represent part of the heritage of law giving, so does the wall of separation. That was my convoluted way of describing what I was trying to say.
Yeah. And I'm pretty much in agreement on that. Its position is absolutely perfect, because it's going to stand between the two religious statements and the capital.
They want it between them?
Yeah, it creates a physical wall between them as well, as a symbolic wall,
mm-hmm.
which is awesome.
That's good, too. Yeah. I like that.
Absolutely.
I'm a big fan of this. And if I remember correctly, they are going to be funding it by basically selling it brick by brick.
Yes.
And happens, you better believe I'm going to be, I'll be purchasing a brick.
I'll be purchasing probably a few.
Awesome.
Because that's what I do.
Yep.
So yeah, I'll keep an eye on this, and since this happens September 13th, we should know by the 14th of whether they get approved, and then if they get approved, we'll put whatever links we find up on our Twitter, Facebook.
Hopefully they start a GoFundMe for it.
Yeah.
So well done to Saline County Atheist Society.
Yeah, excellent
round
job.
Round of applause. All right.
All right. And I think that's all the yakking I got.
That's all I got.
Yep.
All right. Thanks for joining us this week. If you can't seem to get enough of us, follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And why don't you guys put out your contact details while we're closing out here?
All right. Well, if you want to get a hold of me and yell and scream at me about my history segment, you can get a hold of me. My email is tom@secularyakking.com, or you can find me on Twitter at TC Essel. I also have a professional, quote-unquote professional, Facebook page. Just search for Thomas Essel, and I'll pop up in there.
Okay. Carrie?
You can find me at my email, which is carrie@secularyakking.com, and my Twitter is krnightmares.
Which is an awesome Twitter handle.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, she's full of nightmares. Trust me. And I can be found on Twitter at the Motto Guy. And my email is robert@secularyakking.com. Kind of nice and simple. Our Twitter, of course, is @secularyakking. And if you really want to get a hold of us, you can leave us a voicemail at 704-802-9255. That's yak.
All right. On that note, farewell, people of the internet. We will see you next week.
All right, next week, guys.